Agriculture of America is brought to you by Senex Maxtron Synthetic Diesel Engine Oils. Oils that run smart.
Informing America's farmers and ranchers, this is AOA, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Mike Pearson.
Be talking about a lot of different issues running across the gamut of ag today. Todd Neely of DTN will be joining us in just a moment for a legal update, a ag in the courts roundup here as we head into harvest. And in segment two, Jim Romer of Best Weather Inc. will be joining us. We're going to talk about what to expect. We've got some activity developing down in the tropics. How will it play out? Will it play out over the Corn Belt throughout harvest time? In segment three, Chuck Connor of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives will join us. That industry is gearing up for a busy harvest season. They're gearing up for that season at a time when labor supplies are very tight. Chuck's going to provide us an update on the industry. And finally, we're going to close with a conversation with George Goblish. He is a co-chair of the Commodity Classic 2023. That event is coming up in March 2023. They've announced their schedule. They're getting ready. George is going to bring us up to speed with what all they have got planned. Let's turn to Todd Neely. There was an update on Wednesday in the courts about the Endangered Species Act. This is a topic we've covered a few times over the summer here on the show. Todd, bring us up to speed. What did the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals do on Wednesday?
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me on today. It's kind of been a back and forth between what was done in the Trump administration and what the Biden administration is doing on the Endangered Species Act. And what we saw this week, which is interesting, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals basically threw out a decision that was rendered on behalf of some environmental groups in the Northern District of California, District Court. Basically, that court had decided that the Trump rules that basically, kind of allowed landowners to do more on their land when it comes to protecting species and not so much as relying on, you know, regulations and that sort of thing. And so with the Endangered Species Act, what we saw this week is the Ninth Circuit basically said the lower court in Northern California didn't actually take the time to look at the legal merits of that particular reform that was done by the Trump administration. So, it's interesting because I think at this point, it's probably going to go back. It's essentially sent back to the lower court. And so there might be a redo by that court. They may actually go back and consider what they should have considered, or the case may just drop off, but not really sure where that's going to go. But right now, we have the Trump rules in place or reinstated at this point.
All right. So the Trump rules are back in. We've got a little more freedom on the ground that might be owned by the landowner. But Todd, as you mentioned, the case isn't done. It just was kicked back to that lower court. So you're going to be watching this. I imagine it will be some time before any decision would be made there again at the lower court level.
Yeah, that's right. You know, usually when these things go back, we don't see a lot of that, actually. I mean, we do see some courts will actually take up the case again. I think there's some pending motions down there that were never resolved as well. And so for now, we have the Trump rules back in place. But quite honestly, the Northern California court seems inclined to throw those out. So we'll see where that goes.
All right, Todd, let's turn our focus over here to the waters of the U.S. We've got a case pending before the Supreme Court, but we've also got action developing in the House of Representatives. What did they do this past week to communicate with EPA?
Yeah, you know, Mike, there are 15 Republican members of a subcommittee in the House. Earlier this year, they had asked the EPA to withdraw on that rule at the moment. Right now, there hasn't even been a proposed rule when it comes to like a rewrite of the WOTUS definitions. But these same Republican House members sent a letter this week, I believe, to Michael Regan, as well as to Michael Connor, who's the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Civil Works. They want these agencies to withdraw any rulemaking that's pending or just kind of stop things where they are, because, as you said, we have oral arguments coming up in the Supreme Court October 4th in the Sackett case, which deals with wetlands In that particular case, could really determine how the agencies are allowed to regulate wetlands under the Clean Water Act. And so these Republican House members have said that you got to stop this for now. And oh, by the way, we're going to, we're going to take up our investigative powers and try to reassert our authority when it comes to setting definitions under, federal regulations. Because honestly, Congress really does have the power to go back and direct agencies as to where things can go. And so it's an ongoing battle. We see a lot with WOTUS. We've seen it for better part of a decade now. So here we are again.
Indeed we have. And Todd, as you mentioned, it is finally making some progress there in the Supreme Court. That Sackett case, oral arguments on October 4th. What are you anticipating to see with that case when they do make those arguments? Are they bringing any new information, yeah, or will this just be a presentation of everything we know so far?
Well, Mike, it's interesting because the Sacketts, who are property owners out in Idaho, they've been going back and forth with the agency for a number of years, on the right to develop their property. They have a tract of land that was declared wetlands years ago. And so they've been quite active on this front. I'm sure they've gotten quite an education on what the Clean Water Act is. One of the things that they've proposed to the Supreme Court in their briefing is to change the process of determining what wetlands are under the Clean Water Act. And so that part is going to be interesting to hear in the oral arguments, because it really is kind of a new process that they're proposing. It's kind of a two-step process, and I think that they're really looking at this as the opportunity to let the Supreme Court know what they think, in particular about, we've seen this whole issue significant nexus brought up a number of times, and it's really been a big concern in agriculture as to what EPA can control on private property. And so that's really going to be at the center of this, I think, is the possibility that the court might consider, some sort of different process when it comes to determining wetlands.
All right. Yeah, there's a whole lot at play. The two tests that are currently in use, plus that potential third test from the Sacketts. And when this case is all said and done, Todd, of course, it will take some time for the Supreme Court to render their judgment. When do you anticipate that coming out? Would it be early 23?
We have an October oral argument, so we're looking at probably April, May timeframe, somewhere in there. The court usually starts putting out a lot of their decisions, around the springtime. So I suspect we'll probably see it then, maybe around April, May.
All right. Well, Todd, we are going to get you back on as those oral arguments get underway in that Sackett WOTUS case in front of the Supreme Court. And then, of course, it won't be much longer after that. We'll have Proposition 12 going before the Supremes. We'll be sure to get you back on and get your thoughts on how those are progressing. In the meantime, Todd, if our listeners want to follow you, where can they catch your writing?
Yeah, you can go to dtnpf.com. You can follow me on Twitter, too. It's DT Neely, N-E-E-L-E-Y.
Fantastic, folks. Check that out. Our thanks to Todd Neely of DTN. We appreciate you joining us today.
Thanks so much, Mike.
And, folks, stick around. We're going to talk global weather with Jim Rohmer of Best Weather when AOA returns.
Agriculture of America is brought to you by Senex Premium Diesel. Diesel that doesn't mess around.
This is the place most people think of when they hear that a seed has been engineered for superior performance and designed with proven genetic traits. Because something like that could only come from a lab, right? But this is where Allegiant Seed by CHS comes from. It's made by farmers for farmers. Its advanced genetics and unbeatable value are proven here in their fields to make sure they do the job in yours. Talk to your CHS retailer about Allegiant Seed today or learn more at AllegiantSeed.com.
Corn is native to the American continents and was unknown to the rest of humanity until Columbus arrived in the New World in the 15th century. It took less than 100 years after Columbus's discovery for corn to be introduced to farmers in Asia, Africa, Europe, and the Pacific Islands. After wheat and rice, corn is the third most cultivated crop in the world. The four nations that purchase the most corn from the United States are Mexico and Colombia, who use it as a food ingredient, and Japan and South Korea, who buy it mainly for animal feed. Around one-third of the corn grown in the United States is eaten by livestock, another third is used in the production of ethanol fuel, and the rest is either consumed by humans, exported to other nations, or used industrially. Now that sweet corn, that's the variety that most Americans grill or boil for cookouts or just eat straight out of a can with a spoon, accounts for just 1% of all corn grown in the United States. These farm facts brought to you by the American Ag Network.
This is Ernie Johnson Jr. Sports is about overcoming obstacles, and college coaches work hard to help young men overcome Duchenne muscular dystrophy. It's called Coach to Cure MD, and you can help. Text the word CURE to 501-501 to donate $25 on your next mobile phone bill, or go online to coachtocuremd.org. Text the word CURE to 501-501. Help coaches cure MD.
Brought to you by the American Football Coaches Association.
What do Mick Jagger, Barbara Walters, and Star Jones all have in common? They've all suffered from something called heart valve disease. Heart valve disease affects 11 million Americans, and if left untreated, can lead to death. Unfortunately, less than 1 in 4 Americans have much knowledge of this disease that kills more than 25,000 people every year. The good news is that if heart valve disease is treated, patients can recover and live long, happy, and productive lives. But in order to treat heart valve disease, you need to know if you have it. If you or your loved ones are over the age of 65, have been treated with radiation to the chest, have been diagnosed with a heart murmur, or have a history of heart disease, it's time to listen to your heart. Ask your doctor today about screening for heart valve disease. A message brought to you by Heart Valve Voice US. For more information about the symptoms and treatment for valve disease, go to heartvalvevoice-us.org.
Agriculture of America is brought to you by Senex Premium Diesel. Diesel that doesn't mess around.
Keeping America's farmers and ranchers informed on AOA. Now back to Mike Pearson.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for making AOA a part of your day today. In any given year, when we're talking commodity production, of course, we talk about the weather. It's always relevant, not just to crop producers, but to any of us who are producing or mining something that goes into our day-to-day life. And that's no different this year. In fact, it's probably accelerated this year, given the overall global investment focus on commodities. Well, I know one man who keeps track of both the weather and the investment focus, and that's Jim Rohn. He is the man behind Best Weather Inc. and the author of the Climatelligence Report, and he joins us today. Jim, bring us up to speed first and foremost on the tropics. It sounds like things are getting interesting down there in the Gulf.
Yeah, Mike, certainly has been. We had a very quiet early part of the hurricane season because of the record heat in much of Europe and also the UK especially created all this African dust, the strong winds off the Sahara from England. From the record heat, kind of killed the early part of the hurricane season. But now La Nina is taking over, and we're going to see a potential major hurricane early on next week in the Gulf, probably close to Florida, at least a Category 2.
All right. And is that Gaston? Is that the one we're watching here for the next impact?
Well, actually, there's so many actual disturbances right now. It's going to be one or two names after that. I think it's going to be called Eileen or Irene. I'm not quite sure. If the storm goes to the west of Cuba, then it could become a Category 3 to 5 hurricane moving into western Florida. If it goes over central Cuba, which is possible, some models are showing that, it would tend to weaken the storm and maybe just bring a lot of flooding to southern Florida. You know, natural gas prices are collapsing because of this storm not going into the Gulf and also kind of a normal fall season right now. No real cold weather on the horizon. So we're seeing some commodities like natural gas prices react to the global recession and also the weather.
Yes, Jim. And I want to turn there, that natural gas concern, of course, looking out at Europe over this winter. The worry is they could run out of gas if Russia were to shut off the taps. What does the forecast show for the European winter? Is it going to be a cold one?
Well, I have some software that I let farmers around the world use called climatepredict.com. It's free software. It looks at teleconnections. For example, we're looking at the polar ice cap, the polar vortex. You can click on that and actually see all the years we've had hot summers in Europe. This is one of the hottest in history. And that tends to suggest a continuation of a warm weather during the winter. That doesn't mean we're not going to have a month of some colder temperatures, but with the vortex weakening over the North Pole and La Nina, that tends to feature on average a warmer than normal winter.
All right, Jim, if that is the case, given the drop down we've seen in natural gas prices so far, given the fact that the Europeans allegedly are getting their storage supplies filled up, do you think we could catch a break here on natural gas prices through the winter?
Well, they've come down about 30% here over the last few weeks, mainly because this time of the year demand slackens off. We don't have the record heat in the United States like we had this summer or in Europe. Plus, the ideas of the LNG export facilities, not coming online as quickly has created this collapse. So, yeah, obviously, if we have a warmer winter, even normal, I think the odds of getting back above $10 is pretty unlikely. Maybe that would be good news to see lower crude oil and natural gas prices for the economy, because right now, obviously, rising interest rates and inflationary fears are causing sort of a short-term panic, at least, in the stock market and some other commodities.
All right, Jim, and I'm going to move off Europe here in just a moment, but I'm curious, after this year of exceptional heat, after this year of exceptional drought, I'm wondering, as you look out to the next growing season, summer 2023, do you have any indications for how European weather might fare? Are they going to be out of this drought and heat pattern?
I'm not quite sure. Most likely, yes. If La Nina weakens to neutral by next June or July, we'll tend to have maybe a more normal weather pattern. I know some people don't believe in climate change. I certainly do, like 90% of the world's scientists. But if you look at every La Nina that I've seen in the last 70 years, not one had a cool summer in Europe. This was the first one. That tells me the climate has been changing. Look what's happening with these historical droughts out west, the lowest lake water levels in history, like Lake Mead and also the Grand Canyon. So, there's a lot of factors, climate change, La Nina, other teleconnections, we call them. Hopefully the Midwestern grain belt that's been in a drought, especially Iowa westward, will begin to see a lot better weather next summer. But this winter, the South American summer, I'm kind of going on here, sorry, could have drought concerns for corn and beans in Argentina. I'll be watching that very closely for both my Weather Wealth and Climate Intelligence clients, my newsletter, because we could have an explosive grain market this winter if that happens.
Well, I'm glad you went there, Jim, because South America is where I wanted to go next. I just pulled up the drought.gov International Drought Monitor, and it looks like really the entire bottom two-thirds of Argentina are currently in some form of drought. What does happen with a drought in Argentina as La Nina continues?
Yeah, this would be the third consecutive winter, which has really only happened three times in history, or at least in the last 70 years, without La Nina consecutively, 1954 to 56, 1998 to 2000, and I think there was one other year, too. But so this would be the third or fourth year, and that would create reduced yields for corn and soybeans. So I think once we get by the U.S. harvest year, and some of these recessionary concerns and potential lower prices in grains, we have a chance for a bull market this winter, the South American summer.
And Jim, we're talking about Argentina right now. That's where the drought has set in already. Looking up into Brazil, where that soybean planting is already underway, does it tend to spread northward, the drought that is, or will Brazil be sitting fairly pretty this year?
Hey, good question, Mike. Yeah, so we're looking at the 2011 analog year. Okay, that was in La Nina with similar flooding in Colombia to the coffee crop, a drought in the western corn, but the hot summer in the United States. And that 2011-2012 analog year bode well for the soybean crop and also for coffee. We've seen coffee price under pressure again. A lot of people have been bullish. I have not, because I see a rebound in global coffee production. A stronger dollar hurts the market as well. So soybean planting should get off pretty well here as we go into October and early November. It's Argentina, about a month or two from now, that we'll really be focusing on for possibly reduced yields of crops.
All right, Jim, I want to turn our focus over to Asia. We've had concerns spring up here in the past 2 to 3 months in the mainstream media about the drought in China. And I'm curious, from your perspective as a weather professional who relies on information from around the globe, can you rely on the data that comes out of China with regard to their climate or weather on the ground?
Well, sometimes I think the data can be a little bit skewed, so I try to rely on my own information. There's all sorts of various reports coming out. I have a couple sources over in China, actually, that told me before the September USDA crop report that the corn crop wasn't really hurt as much as people thought, nor cotton, even with the drought. And as a result, the USDA did not lower both corn and cotton production. So I have been relying on their information, actually, more than in the past, and my own data, as I mentioned. The real drought's been in the Yangtze River Valley, which about, I think, 20 or 30% of the corn crop's been hurt. Further north in Heilongjiang and Shandong provinces, the soybean and corn crop's in excellent condition. So it's really the European situation, the historical European drought, that could see more exports flowing from U.S. farmers because of the reduced corn production. China, though, I don't think is having really a disaster that Europe and also the Western Corn Belt here has had.
Okay, that's good to hear. And then I just don't know that much about weather in China. When they get a drought like this, does it typically, like here in the U.S., heal itself over the winter? I mean, do we get to a rainy season and that's how China typically comes through their drought situations?
It's pretty similar, yeah. It's more or less. I mean, this has been pretty unusual, to see the drought both in Europe, the Yangtze River Valley, and the Western Corn Belt in Western United States all at the same time. And we tend to have some kind of similar climatological patterns in the Corn Belt as we do over in China. So things are kind of going together. You know, if we end up having a kind of a warm, dry winter in the Corn Belt, the same thing may actually happen in China. So interesting correlations going on right now with global weather patterns.
It certainly is, Jim. And before we let you go, harvest will be rocking and rolling here across the Northern Corn Belt. Do you expect favorable weather here?
I really do. And I think if it wasn't for the stronger dollar and, generally, no frost, obviously, in the Corn Belt this September. And generally, what's really good for the harvest, they're going into October for the Western Corn Belt at least. We would have seen, a major rally here on the corn drought and other factors. The corn drought in the Western Belt, possible bullish USDA report again next month, and also the European situation. So you have kind of a battleground now between bearish, dry, good Corn Belt harvest weather coming up versus lower crop yields and the weather situation in Europe.
And that battle will be carried out in the markets. Jim Rohmer of Best Weather Inc., thank you for joining us today and giving us your insight on what's happening here around the world.
Thank you so much. Enjoyed it.
And folks, stick around. We're going to talk to National Council of Farmer Cooperative CEO Chuck Connor when AOA returns.
Agriculture of America is brought to you by Senex Premium Diesel. Diesel that doesn't mess around.
Choose the proven performance of the Roundup Ready Extend crop system, featuring high-yielding Extend Flex soybeans and the exceptional weed control of Extendamax herbicide with Vapor Grip technology. Elite genetics, triple herbicide tolerance, flexibility that delivers results, backed by 25 years of innovation. That's the Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system of choice. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Always follow stewardship practices, all pesticide label directions, and check with your state pesticide regulatory agency for specific restrictions in your state.
They say if you listen hard enough, you can hear the corn grow. It's true. When you're out in the field, you understand its challenges and what it needs to thrive. Channel Seedsmen bring insights from the field to our team of Bayer plant breeders. Their knowledge inspires our product development. From your best ground to your most challenging conditions, our products are designed to perform in your fields. Visit channellistens.com to see our latest innovations. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
You're listening to AOA for the American Ag Network. I'm Jesse Allen reporting. Well, it's mostly risk-off sentiment across the broader commodity space here on this Friday, with grains down double digits in corn, soybeans, and wheat futures. We see livestock mostly lower except for feeder cattle showing a little bit of strength amid the pullback in the grains. We see energies down sharply, with crude oil down under $80 a barrel for the first time since the beginning of the calendar year pre-Russia-Ukraine war. We see crude oil down almost $5 here as we work through the morning and through the day Friday. The stock market trading lower as well. We'll see what happens with the stocks here, but the broader economic worries about inflation and the surging U.S. dollar seemingly weighing on these markets here today. The invincible dollar continuing to surge to 20-year highs against a basket of currencies fueled by the global uncertainty and reasonably strong U.S. economy in the face of rising interest rates, the Fed's 75 basis point rate hike this week, and hawkish outlook into the end of the year as the U.S. leading the charge globally to fight rising inflation. Now, the grain markets really have little chance for an extended rally amid the U.S. dollar surge. U.S. corn to bean exports showing signs of fatigue now as well, fighting the combo of high prices and the expensive greenback. And that's helping ration down usage on what has become tight corn and bean balance sheets, as reduced supply numbers from USDA this month have put the trade on edge, with harvest results yet to freely flow in. We do have quarterly grain stocks coming up 1 week from today. That'll be a big report to watch as well here as we continue to watch these tight supplies here in the U.S. and tight supplies globally, although Russian wheat estimates continue to rise almost weekly, and Brazil is very optimistic about pumping out a record soybean crop here this year. Let's check the market trade on Friday. You're listening to AOA for the American Ag Network. I'm Jesse Allen.
54. So, basically, it's too late to start saving for retirement, right?
Not right. Starting to save, even in your 50s, can really make a difference.
Well, right now, saving seems hard to wrap my head around. Plus, with the way this year's been going...
Hey, listen. It's okay. You still got this. Just go to aceyourretirement.org. It's an online tool from AARP that can help you get your retirement savings on track no matter your age. It's free and only takes about 3 minutes.
I like 3 minutes.
Yeah. At aceyourretirement.org, you'll chat with Avo, the friendly digital retirement coach. Just answer a few questions and you'll get a personalized plan and tips to help boost your retirement savings. Tips that are easy to understand and tailored to your lifestyle.
I like that too.
Plus, it's sponsored by AARP, so you know they got your back. Just head to aceyourretirement.org and make your plan to start saving for retirement.
Thanks.
That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Agriculture of America is brought to you by Cenex Maxtron Synthetic Diesel Engine Oils. Oils that run smart.
Keeping farmers and ranchers informed. AOA. Now back to Mike Pearson.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for tuning in to AOA. You know, the fall isn't just a busy time of year on farms across this country. It is a very busy time of year for the support network for farmers across the country. And for a lot of folks, that includes a farmer cooperative or two. Joining me today to bring us up to speed on what's developing in that industry is Chuck Connor. He is the president and CEO of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives. And Chuck, thanks for joining us today.
Mike, thanks for having me on today.
You know, before we get too far into this, even though a lot of our listeners might be working with a farmer co-op there in their operation, they might not be familiar with the organization of farmer co-ops, the NCFC. Chuck, tell us a little bit about your group and what it is you do.
Mike, we represent 64 farmer-owned cooperatives scattered across the country. Those co-ops are everything from dairy co-ops processing milk to retail supply co-ops providing farmers with seed, feed and fertilizer, a lot of marketing co-ops, you know, that take farmers' products and put a brand on it and sell it, like Ocean Spray and products like that. So it's a diverse group, but we love the co-op business model here. We love the fact that the last couple of years, co-ops have returned a lot of money to farmers in the form of patronage, and that's been a good thing during these kind of times.
Absolutely. Anytime we're retaining more value and keeping it in rural America, that's a win for those of us here in this part of the country. Chuck, looking out to harvest, it has been a very busy 2 years for co-ops dealing with supply chain issues and COVID and everything else that has happened. As the industry gears up for harvest, I'm curious about labor. That's a concern throughout all sectors of the economy. It seems especially acute in agriculture. How are farmer co-ops dealing with it this fall?
Mike, when I get my CEOs together who represent all of these co-ops and we go around the table and say, what's the number one challenge you face to meet your farmers' needs this year and this month, labor is without question identified by every co-op as their biggest challenge. This has become acute, we need solutions to this problem. We really do.
And Chuck, this is not a new challenge. We've been grappling with a labor shortage in agriculture for a long time, but as you mentioned, it's becoming acute. What is it that's changed, or how could co-ops compete better in this environment?
Well, one of the challenges we face, Mike, of course, is that, you know, a lot of what we need in terms of co-op labor are equipment drivers, tractor drivers, truck drivers, that kind of thing. And in many ways, we're competing directly in a labor market out there in rural America with our own farmer members who are also, you know, experiencing acute labor shortages across their region as well. And so, you know, this is a balance that has to work itself out. Again, it's growing worse, not better. Our view is that, we have got to have access to more foreign labor coming into this country. It's the only real solution to this. Our guest worker programs by which we bring those workers in are very cumbersome, very broken. We've been trying for years to fix this legislatively. We are putting new emphasis on this now, again, just because I think our ability to feed ourselves and our ability to really respond to the sort of post-pandemic food crisis that is out there really turns on getting more labor.
It certainly does. And that was what prompted me to put you on this week. Last week, NCFC worked together with a number of other ag groups to call for more action on the Farm Worker Modernization Act. And Chuck, I'm curious about that particular piece of legislation. What is it in there that's going to help the American Farmer Co-op secure labor better?
Two things are important in this. And this is a bill that has passed the U.S. House of Representatives now twice. But has yet to pass the United States Senate at all. And the important part of this bill, again, is twofold. I mentioned the guest worker reforms. This bill has a lot of those reforms in it that will make guest workers from foreign countries available, particularly to smaller producers, much, much more readily. The current system really, you know, if you don't have a full-time lawyer and an accountant sort of at your disposal, you're not going to be able to navigate these rules and regulations, and that's just not right because most farmers don't have access to that. So we need a simpler system, an easier system for farmers to use. And then quickly, Mike, the second part of this is we do have a lot of workers in this country working on our farms and ranches today, some say as many as a million workers whose paperwork has expired, and they're technically not legally in this country, even though they've been working on the same farm and ranch oftentimes for many, many, many years. We need to make sure and take the uncertainty of the possibility of losing those workers away and give them some kind of legal status to ensure that they can stay and continue to work in agriculture and work, you know, toward feeding America, if you will. And the bill would also do that.
Certainly. Once you've got somebody trained and they want to stay on the job, let's do what we can to help them stay on the job. Chuck, you mentioned this has passed the House twice. We have labor as a major topic of conversation across the economy. What are you hearing from senators? Why is there not any action on that side of the Capitol?
Well, when you talk about foreign labor in politics today, Mike, it's a very dicey business out there. And politicians, you know, are reluctant to get in the middle of this. They're fearful for their own reelection. you know, I wish I could say that they would acknowledge what the right thing is and simply do it for the good of the country, but that doesn't seem to be, you know, sort of the season of politics that we're in, where so many are sort of looking out for their own reelection interests. Our point to them is that, you know, being for agriculture can never be a bad political decision. We have such a remarkable food system in this country. We proved it during the pandemic. You know, we had glitches, but look how much, you know, how we pivoted and evolved, and really, you know, none of us went hungry throughout the pandemic. And that's something to be thankful for. Politicians need to step up here and do the right thing for farmers. And I think they'll be rewarded for it in the end, Mike, not punished for it.
Well, I think I certainly hope we see some action here and do some things to make this labor situation a little bit better, a little more secure across rural America. We've got enough challenges with high input prices. We've got to make sure we have availability of work and help. And to that end, Chuck, while I've got you on the line, another major concern we had here just 2 weeks ago was this rail strike. And of course, a lot of your farmer co-op members are on rail lines. They're vital for getting that grain out or goods in. And I'm curious, the industry, as you're watching now, we still don't really have that strike issue resolved. Voting is beginning right now. How are our co-ops grappling with this supply chain concern still?
Well, it's a concern. There was certainly a sigh of relief on that Friday morning when, you know, when there was a temporary settlement of sorts. And, you know, that was something we celebrated. I think a lot of our members, Mike, are very uncertain of this vote and what the ultimate outcome is going to be. I will say that the silver lining here, and I don't want to, you know, sound too Pollyanna-ish here, but, you know, that this is a critical time in terms of movement of product out there on our farms and ranches, getting all the fertilizer and everything you need for fall applications sort of in place. Having a settlement and getting us through that we were at a critical juncture. So we're thankful that it's been somewhat normal during that. Although again, many of my folks are still worried because they think it could be short-lived based upon this vote, and then we will be back later on and, you know, with problems. But for the most part, and again, there's always exceptions, but for the most part, everything that we're going to need, you know, for field preparation and all the fall application and everything appears to be sort of okay and in place for now. And, you know, it's going to get us through this post-harvest period, which is always a big rush period.
It certainly is. And I'm glad you mentioned that, Chuck. That was going to be my next question. How are we set up for those fall application needs? And now I'm glad to hear that America's farmer co-ops are sitting fairly well. But looking out to next year, Chuck, you've got a lot of concerns still on the plates of many co-ops here around the country. Other than labor, what are some of the major thoughts here as we get into this election cycle?
Well, we do worry about supply chain, Mike, still. And again, it's rail. It's a number of different circumstances. Obviously, you know, just natural gas availability, you know, around the globe as a result of the Russian war, you know, is problematic. For the most part, again, my folks are advising me that you know, the anhydrous supply this fall is going to be okay. They worry about nitrogen, you know, going forward, again, because of the reliance on natural gas, but anhydrous appears to be okay. And as you know, that's the typical nitrogen demand for the fall would be anhydrous applications, you know, once the old crop is removed. So we can, you know, we can limp through the next couple of months, but there's still longer term has got to be some changes made here and some resolution in order to make sure that we've got the product we need to have, you know, a big crop in 2023, which it certainly looks like we're going to need that, as USDA is telling us, you know, that things are going to be tighter than expected this year. And of course, prices have reacted accordingly. And we need farmers to have a good year coming up, and we need them to have what they need to make sure they have a good year.
Indeed we do, folks. That's Chuck Connor, President and CEO of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives. Chuck, thanks for joining us today.
Take care, Mike. Good to talk to you.
And folks, stick with us. We're going to talk Commodity Classic when AOA returns.
Agriculture of America is brought to you by Senex Premium Diesel. Diesel that doesn't mess around.
You are not your diagnosis.
A medical chart is not your identity.
And vision loss does not define you.
Your drive shows who you are.
And you are not alone.
Because we are driven too.
To be a beacon of strength.
A champion of courage.
An advocate for hope.
You are not alone.
Because we are stronger together.
We drive the research for the cures we are finding.
We're fighting macular degeneration,
retinitis pigmentosa,
Usher syndrome,
and the entire spectrum of blinding retinal diseases.
We fund.
We fight.
We win.
We are the foundation fighting blindness.
Together, we are fighting blindness.
Join the fight at fightingblindness.org.
I'll take dig a little, learn a lot for 30 bushels.
Soft and crumbly. Tom.
How does healthy soil feel to the touch?
Correct.
Dig a little for 40 bushels.
Sweet and earthy. Tom.
What does healthy soil smell like?
Yes. Go again.
Dig a little for 50 bushels.
Dark, porous, and alive. Tom.
What does healthy soil look like?
You win.
Understanding the basics and benefits of healthy soil can make your farm a winner too, through lower input costs, better yields, and drought protection, which can lead to a healthier bottom line for your business. Contact your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office today to find out how you can unlock the secrets in your soil. This message brought to you by USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service and this radio station.
Choose the proven performance of the Roundup Ready Extend crop system, featuring high-yielding Extend Flex soybeans and the exceptional weed control of Extend-A-Max herbicide with Vapor Grip technology. Elite genetics, triple herbicide tolerance, flexibility that delivers results, backed by 25 years of innovation. That's the Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system of choice. Extend-A-Max is a restricted-use pesticide. Always follow stewardship practices, all pesticide label directions, and check with your state pesticide regulatory agency for specific restrictions in your state.
They say if you listen hard enough, you can hear the corn grow. It's true. When you're out in the field, you understand its challenges and what it needs to thrive. Channel Seedsmen bring insights from the field to our team of Bayer plant breeders. Their knowledge inspires our product development. From your best ground to your most challenging conditions, our products are designed to perform in your fields. Visit channellistens.com to see our latest innovations. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Tune in the first Wednesday of every month to listen to The Monthly Grind here on AOA. It's brought to you by our friends at the National Corn Growers Association, and each month we're going to dig into one specific aspect of corn demand. What happens to this grain after it leaves your operations and enters the global supply chain? That's what we're going to talk about each month on The Monthly Grind. Again, that's the first Wednesday of every month, and you can also find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. It's a show you don't want to miss.
Corn is native to the American continent and was unknown to the rest of humanity until Columbus arrived in the New World in the 15th century. It took less than 100 years after Columbus's discovery for corn to be introduced to farmers in Asia, Africa, Europe, and the Pacific Islands. After wheat and rice, corn is the third most cultivated crop in the world. The four nations that purchase the most corn from the United States are Mexico and Colombia, who use it as a food ingredient, and Japan and South Korea, who buy it mainly for animal feed. Around one-third of the corn grown in the United States is eaten by livestock, another third is used in the production of ethanol fuel, and the rest is either consumed by humans, exported to other nations, or used industrially. Now that's sweet corn, that's the variety that most Americans grill or boil for cookouts, or just eat straight out of a can with a spoon, accounts for just 1% of all corn grown in the United States. These farm facts brought to you by the American Ag Network.
Thank you.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Agriculture of America is brought to you by Senex Premium Diesel. Diesel that doesn't mess around.
Keeping America's farmers and ranchers informed on AOA. Now back to Mike Pearson.
Well, folks, welcome back to AOA. Thanks for making us a part of your day. You know, it's not going to be too much longer. And for a lot of our listeners up north, the snow will begin falling. The crops will be off the field. And we'll start looking for a reason to go and get warmed up. And we'll have that reason coming March 9th through the 11th as Commodity Classic 2023 kicks off in Orlando, Florida. Joining me today to talk about it is George Goblish. He is a Minnesota farmer. He serves on the board of the American Soybean Association, and he is a co-chair for next year's Commodity Classic. George, thanks so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. It's a pure joy to be here to talk about such a great show that's coming up here in March. And Any northern farmer that hates the winter should really look at going down to this show, because the learning experiences down there are going to be absolutely amazing. You're going to learn how to improve your ROI and learn a whole bunch of new technologies and visit with industry leaders that come to this show just so they can have some one-on-one time with farmers.
George, let's talk about this a little bit, because Commodity Classic 2023, get together of all the big commodity groups here in the country, happening down at the Orange County Convention Center in Orlando. What's it like for somebody who's never been? George, what is it like when you first walk into that door and you see that huge trade show and all the educational experiences?
You know, the first time I came to the show is several years ago, but it's grown since then. But when I walked through the doors, and I was just in amazing awe. It was like I couldn't believe all the machinery they could fit into this huge showroom, and it's not small machinery. They got the big combines, the big tractors, big equipment, and huge trade show booths from like Bayer and Corteva, and all the major seed brands are there. The chemical companies are there. It's something to be seen. Absolutely something to be seen.
It is indeed, folks. There are farmers there from all across the country, well, and around the world. They definitely come from all over for Commodity Classic. George, what is the theme for the 2023 Classic?
Our theme this year is the next generation. And that relates to not only the next generation of farmers coming up, but also the next generation of technology. Because this is a show that vendors bring their new technologies to. So then they introduce it to the farmers, and really it's the cutting edge farmers that come to this show, and other older farmers too, that, you know, they're just not quite into the technology yet, but they want to come learn, and this is a great opportunity for them to learn.
It is. And George, one of my favorite things about going to the Classic and the other farm events is reconnecting with farmers that you don't get a chance to see very often. There's something to be said for that in-person meeting, isn't there? And how the growing season went from other places in the country.
Yeah, that truly is. We actually are putting more trade show hours on the floor this year, so you will have even more time to connect with people that you've already met over the internet or, you know, got ideas from. They come to the show, you can talk in person, and then also to make those new connections too. So then every year you can come down to the Classic and keep in touch.
Indeed you can. George, looking out before we can get to Commodity Classic 2023, we've got to get through harvest. And while we've got you on the line here, Vesta, Minnesota, how's the soybean crop looking up in your part of the world?
Soybeans are doing well. They're not going to be a bend buster this year, but I would guess average to a little above average. We have not taken any beans out. We've actually jumped to corn because our corn's been running in the low to mid-20s, and there's a really good basis at the local grind here to haul in corn. So we've been pulling corn out the last week.
All right, and how have corn yields been looking for you?
Right at average or a little below average right now, but we've been taking the lighter ground. So that's to be seen, and we got into some really good corn last night. So that's going to be above average. So hopefully from here on out, the good ground will pull through.
All right, and it's always good to have something to talk about when you get down to these farmer meetings, because one of the things that happens at Commodity Classic that we ought to talk about are the banquets. George, do you make it a habit to get to one of those when you're at the Commodity Classic?
Yep, absolutely. There's the reception, too. There's an opening reception the first night. That is open to everybody. Your family, you can bring the kids along. Food, plenty of food, drinks. And then of course, ASA and MCGA had their banquets along with the other commodity groups. And, of course, I always go to the ASA one because that's the side that I support. And yeah, it's great speakers. You can't go wrong at attending the banquets. Great food, great spirits, and you get to sit down and just talk to your friends and family from around the country.
That's the thing. It's great food, it's great spirits, and it's great camaraderie. It's good to catch up and hear how the growing season went for farmers from, well, all different parts around the world. George, for listeners who are curious about Commodity Classic, they might want to get more information. I understand you folks have a website and a social media presence?
Yep. We can be found at commodityclassic.com, which you can visit anytime. Actually, our housing will become available in mid-November. So check out that website for housing and registration. And then also we can be found on Facebook and Twitter and also YouTube. We have a couple dozen videos on YouTube from years past, so you can check that out too.
Fantastic, folks. Do be sure to take advantage of that. Get over there, commodityclassic.com. Get your tickets, get your hotels here as we get into November, and get yourself down to Orlando in March, March 9th through the 11th for Commodity Classic 2023. George Goblish, Minnesota farmer, thank you so much for talking to us today and bringing us up to speed on what's coming there in March.
Thank you.
And folks, thanks so much for tuning in to AOA this week. Next week, we're going to be talking with Jackie Fatka, John Baranek on weather, and Shelly Aronov of Interplant, a company that has developed a new genetic mode of action for soybean plants to communicate. Tune in on Monday to AOA.
Agriculture of America is brought to you by Cenex Maxtron Synthetic Diesel Engine Oils. Oils that run smart.
Choose the proven performance of the Roundup Ready Extend crop system, featuring high-yielding Extend Flex soybeans and the exceptional weed control of Extend-A-Max herbicide with Vapor Grip technology. Elite genetics, triple herbicide tolerance, flexibility that delivers results, backed by 25 years of innovation. That's the Roundup Ready Extend crop system. The system of choice. Extend-A-Max is a restricted-use pesticide. Always follow stewardship practices, all pesticide label directions, and check with your state pesticide regulatory agency for specific restrictions in your state.
They say if you listen hard enough, you can hear the corn grow. It's true. When you're out in the field, you understand its challenges and what it needs to thrive. Channel Seedsmen bring insights from the field to our team of Bayer plant breeders. Their knowledge inspires our product development. From your best ground to your most challenging conditions, our products are designed to perform in your fields. Visit channellistens.com to see our latest innovations. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
As an organ donor, your story doesn't have to end. The good in you can live on. In fact, you could save up to 8 lives with your gifts. Your heart could keep beating. Your kidneys could keep filtering. And your intestines could keep on digesting for others. And that's not all. You can improve the lives of 50 more people as an eye and tissue donor, restoring sight and health. And you're not just helping out the person receiving the transplant. You're touching whole families with your life-saving gift. register in minutes. Just go to organdonor.gov. You'll be happy you did. And just maybe, someone else will be happy too. Sign up today. Go to organdonor.gov. It saves lives. U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.